Welcome back to the sound plays of Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Book 2 of A Bridge of Doom. If you like what we provide, please rate, review, share, and follow on your favorite platform. Questions and compliments can be sent to our email. Ask yourself this: do you feel lucky? Well, do you? Go ahead. Donate a dollar to this theater. Make my day. This theater is not about profits, but the equipment and media do require funding. Though listening to these productions is free for you, providing them isn't free for me, as we are completely free of advertising. If you care to help, please donate via the Ko-fi.com website listed with the descriptions of each episode. All proceeds go to our production material and equipment needs. Except those wishing to remain anonymous, benefactors will be announced in the final credits. And thank you, truly, for listening.
Lockpins out!
Rip the gate!
Step through the gateway and enter the universe of the Harkon Theater.
This is episode 25.
This is book 2 of A Bridge of Doom by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Traversity, Demons and Demigods. The Journeys of an Enchanter.
Calron wrestled with his rafting pole where it stuck in the bottom again.
Cast a spell to make the raft go where you wish it.
Mara knelt at her corner of the float and stroked her paddle lazily into the water, leaving behind dissipating ripples.
Or is there not magic for it?
If not for her help in finding a dragon, he would have glowered at her with disgust.
I wouldn't know. I wasn't raised near water.
His answer sufficient, she squinted through the blinding dazzle of sunlight on the waters of the widening tributary, seeking a particular landmark on the uneven shores of moss-laden trees. They had been on the water since just after dawn, following meandering tributaries into the wider areas of the marsh, their destination a particular island where at least one dragon nested. Calron would catch a glimpse of her amused smirks whenever he got his pole entangled in underwater branches or lost his grip while he was rubbing the sores on his shackled wrists. He squeezed the pole tighter with each humiliation and swallowed vicious retorts while marking each transgression in memory until the moment he would be rid of her.
This is yet another occasion when a woman holds power over me, possesses knowledge greater than mine, and has even taken complete advantage of me. Not that I truly mind.
A welcome result was his thinking processes being more lucid than they'd been in moons.
But her midnight tryst still serves as an example of female superiority. An illusion of society maintained strongest by the druids. But not for long. Once I find out the secrets of Gaewon's crystals, those tables will be turned.
At the same time, he knew he was depending,
foolishly no doubt,
on an encounter with a dragon to solve his problems, and yet...
Gaewon has apparently profited greatly from his confrontation with the dragon locked in that cavern under the lost city.
Struck by this fact, he wondered,
is Mara's presence all that necessary for me? Gaewon has not been accompanied by a druid as far as I know. Perhaps it is already time to discard this companion. Mara, my dear, just how much do you know about dragons?
She glanced back at him and frowned amidst her paddling to make sure he was being earnest.
Enough to know one doesn't anger them.
Deciding to play on her imagined superiority, he pretended complete ignorance.
I'm afraid to admit, I feel almost foolish asking your help to blunder into one. Are they difficult to approach?
Don't play games with me, Calron. If you want to know something, just ask. If you were that stupid, you wouldn't have planned on finding a dragon in the first place.
His upper lip curling contemptuously, he swallowed more curses before noticing the raft was crossing deep water and moving straight for a shoreline ahead. Having no more need to push away from obstacles in the shallower areas, he lifted the pole out and laid it on the logs of the raft. Then, staying on his knees, for the raft was small, he moved closer to where Mara carefully watched the approaching island. He noticed her strokes becoming quieter and more deliberate.
Forgive me.
His anger with her was quelled momentarily by his anticipation.
But I've had to deal with Spiss for many riads. I forgot your chosen calling and obvious intelligence.
She turned her head to sparkle at him.
Then consider yourself forgiven.
He mustered the sweetest smile he could.
Thank you. Now, as to my intended question, are dragons difficult to communicate with? Or can anyone approach gently and speak to them?
That requires a long answer.
She turned the raft and glided parallel to the mossy bank as she sought something.
But the short of it is, it depends. There. Smell it?
He caught an acrid odor just beginning to permeate the frosty smells of the marsh.
The bitterness?
Yes, that's a swamp dragon. Some call them black dragons. I remembered talk among my sisters of a lair on one of the islands. This must be it.
She ceased paddling and curled her blade, steering the raft toward the bank, using their momentum to catch hold of dry land.
And on what does your answer depend?
On the age and the breed of the serpent. Ice dragons are said to be cruel fire dragons, too. Swamp dragons are known to be quite vicious towards intruders on their lairs.
Calron leveled his white-blue gaze at her.
Are you trying to frighten me, Mara?
She shrugged, then dug her paddle firmly into the bank and pulled the raft further up.
Just warning you, these beasts can be as moody as a thunderstorm. Don't expect to be tolerated for very long, especially if there are young ones about.
Eh? There are hatchlings here?
Not that I know of. But then I've never gone looking for one here. Just heard about it.
She stopped tugging on the paddle and looked curiously at him.
You weren't thinking of stealing a dragonling, were you?
He had not before this moment, but quickly decided he wasn't prepared to consider it.
No. Too many problems involved with first capturing, then feeding.
Good.
She laid the paddle aside and brushed her hands clean.
You'd simply end up being eaten.
He waited for her to get up and got frustrated when she didn't.
What are we waiting for?
She surveyed the moss-laden trees covering the steep bank rising before them.
It's a good idea to sit quietly and listen before venturing into a dragon's territory. If it's in a particularly bad mood, coming back another day would be prudent.
Ah.
He nodded appreciably, glad for her caution. He remembered the dragon's cave under the lost city of the underground and its lack of smells.
Why the stench?
It's the acid their bodies generate. Much like having to belch after a big meal, swamp dragons have to spit their acid or they build up too much in their bodies and get sick. It's the same with other dragons. That's why the territory around a fire dragon's lair is always burned.
She stopped and listened for a while longer, then got up and stepped onto the land.
It seems quiet. Let's go.
Waiting for him to join her, she then started weaving her way between bulging tree trunks, glancing back every now and again to see that he was following. Evergreen shrubs crouched like cowering animals among the boles, their branches void of blooms under the autumn suns. Reaching the flatter areas of the island, they came across a beaten path winding its way through the forest, its wide turns and straightways overhung with hanging moss. Recent tracks clearly indicated a roaming dragon. Mara stopped and chewed her lip anxiously as she looked both directions.
Problem?
We shouldn't be caught on its tramping ground, but I need to study the tracks to see which way it went last.
He swept a hand generously.
Then study, my dear. We should have plenty of warning if it approaches.
She turned and placed fingertips over his mouth.
Calron, how many dragons have you ever seen?
He pushed her hand away from his face.
One. Is that not enough?
She raised an eyebrow at him.
Apparently not. You don't seem to have a true understanding of serpents.
He resisted the urge to scowl at her peremptory tone.
Now the woman is trying to teach me. That's why I asked for your help, Mara.
Then stop treating me as an idiot, subordinate, and listen. Have you ever heard a snake slither? A spider crawl? A bird soar? No. A dragon moves like all of these things when it wants to. The stories of dragons shaking the ground with their approach comes from times when they wanted to frighten their prey, make it run, and make their hunt more engaging.
Her eyes were deadly earnest.
You seek knowledge from them, therefore you presume them to be intelligent. They are, some more than others. If you wish to survive this encounter intact and wiser than when you started, I suggest you respect and not scorn them.
Taken aback by her forceful manner and unable to dredge up a shrewd response, he blinked silently and wondered begrudgingly if...
She might deserve better regard than the women I've dealt with so far. If so, I will have to learn all she knows.
Satisfied with his lack of retort, she surveyed the path in both directions again, then squatted and examined the soil. Finding it relatively soft, she stood and moved each way a few paces, deciphering the slots as best she could.
This way.
She moved off the path and after a few strides paralleled the path, keeping her steps light, her senses alert. As they walked, Calron dug into his pockets and brought out his newly acquired, yet minuscule, collection of stones. Keeping up with Mara intermittently, he bent his head over his hand and fingered through the handful of black agate and quartz, seeking the best ones for the defensive spell he played through his memory. In spite of his uncertain feelings toward her, he had not turned a deaf ear to her warnings. He wanted to be prepared for any surprises. Coming to the edge of a clearing with many tracks, she stopped and frowned in puzzlement.
Odd.
Having found three suitable stones, he pocketed the rest and came up beside her.
What is it?
For what has this clearing been made?
She pointed to the other side, where the tracks cut through a wall of evergreen brush.
Swamp dragons prefer caves.
Then what's behind the bush?
Let's find out.
She silenced him with a raised palm, listened to the forest, then ventured across the clearing, examining the confusion of tracks going every which way. Calron followed tentatively, pausing to look around. Something tickled his sixth sense. Mara stopped at the edge of the evergreens and stooped to examine the smaller tracks here.
Sweet mother.
She parted the branches before her and looked beyond. The crushed remnants of the shell, long since discarded, confirmed her fear.
Oh, no.
What? What's wrong?
He moved up behind and peered over her shoulder.
There's a youngling.
She stepped back unsteadily, her complexion going pale.
We shouldn't be anywhere near here. We're in danger.
He grabbed her shoulders and jerked her around to face him, his blue-white eyes wide with fury.
Danger? You said you could do this.
Terrified, she shook her head and tried to wriggle from his grasp.
Not when there's a youngling. The mother will be violently protective.
She stared at something moving behind him. He released her and spun about to behold the monster already in the clearing and rising above them. Dark eyes burned with rage as it revealed a huge gaping maw filled with black teeth. Shifting its weight on the fulcrum of its hind legs, it reached out bent claws and prepared to lunge at the raiders on its nest. Trapped with the stench of acid and death surrounding them, Calron tightened his fingers around the black agate. With the intensity of sudden desperation, he raised his fist to smite the air with magic. Chapter 24. The next day was overcast and gloomy as they made their way along the trails, winding through the high grasses and moss-laden trees of the outer marsh. Mid-morning, they saw a trail of black smoke wriggling its way skyward, the beacon fire atop the Druid Temple, and headed that direction, reaching it by midday.
The beacon was originally for inexperienced initiates who had become lost during their forays into the heart of the marsh.
Upon recognizing the trail he had followed to the temple back in early springtide, the enchanter nudged Male to pick up their pace and led the way through the brush until they came to the path's end, a wide stream banked by briars, water lilies, and tasseled grass. Thasgar was wary of the impassable barrier of thorns and deep, murky water.
You sure this is the right way?
Oh, yes. 'Tis difficult to overcome the formidable illusion of the greenery unless one knows the druidic ways. This is why I'm bothered that Calron was able to get within.
He slipped out of the saddle, approached the thickest portion of the briars on the bank, raised his arms slowly until they were over his head, then, concentrating on the counterspell for the illusion, dropped them. The air over the slow-moving stream shimmered for an instant, and suddenly the bank's appearance changed.
Oh, God!
They beheld the magnificent natural bridge spanning the waterway. Three enormous great leaf trees that had grown in a low arch, a large one joining branches with two smaller ones, reaching from the opposite bank. The trunks of the trees were wide enough for two mounts to pass with ease, each side of the bridge railed by thick, woven, leafy branches. Through a long corridor of overhanging branches of similar great leaves and red sugar saps lining the path on the opposite bank could be seen the temple, an odd construction mix of living trees and stone. The autumn leaves of bright red and gold provided a magnificent frame for the site.
Beautiful.
Ablui regarded the enchanter with interest.
I wasn't aware that druidic magic was one of your talents.
It isn't. Remember, one of the druids is a friend of mine. Ritual showed me some of their pathways, but none of their magic. I used an enchant to momentarily lift the illusion. I haven't dispelled it. We'll have to move across quickly. I don't think my invocation will last very long.
He mounted Maligan and started across the bridge.
How did they make the trees grow like this?
With his eyes, Gon unsuccessfully tried to trace and untangle the leafy, sinewy branches. Through their love for them, the druids requested this service from the trees, and, with help of their magic, the trees obliged. Even so, these trees could just as easily untangle and straighten themselves, if they so wished. With amusement, he noticed his friends urge their steeds faster across the bridge.
Genuine respect for life. That explains why their temple is made of stone and trees, not milled wood.
As they reached the other side, a figure in brown robes seemed to just appear out of the underbrush and raised a palm.
Halt! You are not brothers, and you come across without a guide. What is your purpose?
Be at ease. We do not intrude with hostile intent. Brother Ritual is a close friend of mine. We come to speak with him, seek his assistance. We are on a manhunt for an escaped fugitive. The young, red-haired man frowned.
There are no criminals here. How did you pass over the bridge without escort?
I am familiar with the ways and paths, but fear not. Brother Ritual did not betray your secrets to me.
Then how...
I am an enchanter. This only made furrows appear in the druid's brow. His dark eyes studied each member of the group.
Gawain wondered how Calron would have made his way past the Watcher.
Has another man, a mage, been across the bridge in the past few days?
No one has crossed except our sisters and brothers. And as for your request, Brother Ritual is not here. He has gone his way into the world beyond the Dread Mire. We cannot help you.
Ablui reined his steed alongside Gawain.
Have we intruded here?
No, we've broken no laws. I think the fellow's just perturbed that I overpowered their gateway. There's nothing wrong with petitioning help from them. He's just performing his duty as watcher of the bridge.
What about Ritual? Gone his way?
I'm actually glad to hear that. It means Ritual has passed through one of the higher circles and has gone out to the world as a fully adept druid.
But we no longer have a contact here, and this watcher doesn't seem impressed with our purpose.
There is one other person we can talk to. I didn't want to mention her unless necessary.
Perceiving his reasons, Ablui returned the smile with a raised eyebrow and nodded. Gawain addressed the druid again.
I wish to speak with Risha.
She is one of the sisters and a candidate for the vows. Outsiders may not speak with the cloaked ones.
But she is only a candidate and hasn't taken the vows.
Yes, no, she has not taken the vows.
Then she is not yet a cloaked one. I respectfully request you take us to her or allow us to pass.
The red-headed druid masked a scowl.
I will escort you to the temple. The High Priestess dislikes having visitors wandering about the island alone.
Picking up a thin staff from beside the path, he turned and led the way through the colorful corridor of sugar saps and great leaves toward the large structure of stone and living trees. Flayna reigned alongside her husband.
Risha? A friend of Ritual's?
Yes.
Not meeting her eyes, he surveyed the carpet of fallen crimson and bright yellow leaves on which their horses walked. Recognizing the tone of voice Gawain used when he replied in a specific manner, answering questions at face meaning and not wanting to elaborate.
I know there must have been deeper involvement.
Either between Risha and Ritual or Risha and Gaewon. She decided to cut to the heart of the matter.
Did you have an intimate relationship with her?
Eh? No. She tried to, and I nearly accepted it.
But?
She was devoted to the temple, but hadn't fully accepted this within herself. She used me, tested her self-doubts on me, trying to determine whether or not she truly wanted to commit her chastity to the druids. I perceived her devotions from the beginning when I met her as a friend of Ritual's, but I didn't understand her sudden, extreme interest in me until later.
How long had you been here seeing Ritual?
Just 5 days. Risha knew this and tried to move our friendship quickly to intimacy.
He suppressed the burning memory of walking with her through one of the temple orchards one evening. Her unexpected, passionate, yearning kisses and the pale gleam of her naked flesh when she had disrobed suddenly.
I've chosen you.
And pulled him down with her.
You will be mine, and I will be yours.
Caught completely unaware and inwardly shocked at the fervor of her desire and her uncharacteristic lustfulness, he stood hurriedly and moved back. She got up and approached him again, slowly.
I've chosen you.
Struggling with his own desires, Gaewon backed off further.
Risha, this isn't right.
While his loins burned with the anticipation of meeting her request, his inner voices rang warnings. This isn't good. She isn't the one. And he backed away again.
There is no need to fear it, Gaewon.
She thought him to be hesitant from lack of experience.
I cannot.
He denied himself and her what their physical passions craved. In what started as a final gesture, she took his hand in a farewell, as if releasing him from their desire. Then, determined to compel his carnal urges, she grabbed his arm and had begun intoning mystical words. A druidic invocation for concupiscence. But Gaewon tore her hand from his, spun away as he invoked a spell, and vanished. After moving a safe distance away, he had watched her sitting and crying among the fruit trees, as he felt both ashamed and relieved. Ashamed that he had not foreseen her intent and was forced to wound her heart, and relieved that he had avoided deflowering someone who was clearly not in control of her maturing feelings and physical drives. The next day was when he had planned to depart. Risha had been there to see him off, outwardly pretending as if nothing had happened, yet radiating anger at him as if he was the one who had wrongfully attempted to initiate the intimacy. This accusatory treatment stung, yet he could also see in her eyes the new devotion she had found in the druidic ways, and he understood what she had been trying to resolve through him. Has she ever forgiven me for leaving her alone in the night? Or forgiven herself for relenting to her youthful urges? Flayna misjudged his expression as one of discomfort.
Did you love her?
No.
He shook his head and shuddered, ridding himself of the memories.
I never did love her. That's what was wrong. She wanted more than I wanted to give.
Do you think seeing her is such a good idea, then?
We need their help, thus we need someone to vouch for us. She is all there is. And, considering she has made herself a candidate for the Cloaked Ones, I think there should be nothing to make our meeting awkward.
What are Cloaked Ones?
young women who preserve their chastity for ritual sacrifice within the druidic rites. That's all I know.
I see. Thank you for telling me. I know you didn't have to.
I have no secrets from you, my love.
They stopped at a ring of large elms circling the temple while the young druid continued inside. At a signal from Gawain, everyone dismounted and took the opportunity to stretch. Clough and Thasgar began uncinching saddles to allow their steeds to blow.
There you go.
Feeling self-assured with being in familiar territory, the enchanter decided to take a look around the temple grounds, despite the druid's statement about the high priestess's preferences. He had freely explored the place before, and there was no reason he could not do the same now. Remembering on his previous visit where he had seen some of the candidates for the vows working in the gardens, he waved his intention to Clough as he sought one of the paths that would lead him there.
How good of you to see me before I take the vow.
Risha stepped away from the small circle of young women toiling in one of the herb gardens.
I never expected to see you in the Untouched Lands again.
She motioned for him to follow her as she strolled leisurely away from the garden, her white cinched brown dress catching momentarily on the bushes reaching across the path. I hear Ritual has gone out into the wilderness.
Yes. About a moon ago, he left us. Had you come to see him?
Not exactly. He stopped as she spun around to face him. Her dark hair was longer now, he noted as she tossed it confidently over her shoulder. And he had forgotten how tall she was, her height just short of his. If her appearance had matched the greatness of her height, instead of being so plain, bulbous nose and broad lips, she might have been rather stunning.
To see me, then,
She smiled with self-satisfaction. Gawain interpreted the glow in her eyes and knew what was in her mind. He hated to disappoint her again and debated whether he should find another way to get support from the druids. The matter was taken out of his hands.
I cannot be with you now, Gawain.
She looked off to the horizon, then frowned and looked back to him.
But you know that, don't you?
I know you are a candidate for the Cloaked Ones, yes. I offer you my hopes for your happiness in what you've chosen. Looking into his blue-gold eyes with her brown, she cocked her head at an angle, smiled again, and crossed her arms.
Don't be so formal with me, Gawain. You and I have nothing to hide. For what have you come?
He was glad the subject had turned to business. We are on a royally charged manhunt for an escaped fugitive, a dark mage guilty of murder. We've tracked him into the marsh, but have no way of following him easily. I ask for a favor. She raised an eyebrow with curiosity.
What sort of favor?
What did she say when she found out you were married?
Clough pulled his side of the druid raft around a rotted tree stump jutting out of the murky water.
Nothing, actually.
Gawain ducked a strand of hanging moss.
But by her expression, I could tell she was definitely surprised. I don't think she'll ever speak to me again. Just as well.
At least the druids were happy about caring for our horses. Did you see how they delighted over Maledon? One would think they'd seen elf forces.
Probably not. There aren't any elf forests in this part of the land.
Speaking of which, when will Chania's crew be moving inland from the coast?
I checked in on her with my crystal. She's aboard ship again. I would guess she'll drop anchor offshore in the next day or so.
Excellent.
He peered in the direction they were headed.
This tributary looks like it's feeding into a wider area ahead. Have you checked on Cauron's location lately?
The enchanter looked at the sky, what of it he could see through the matrix of weeping branches and gray moss overhead,
and judged it to be approaching sunset. Yes, and it's getting stronger now. He hasn't traveled very far in here.
Perhaps he's found a hole to hide in.
We should anchor here, then, and wait until nightfall before we continue. Thasgar piped up.
Why's that?
Best advice from the druids. The larger animals get more active at night in the marsh. Therefore, it's best to keep moving at night and sleep in the day. Also, Calron is less likely to expect an attack in the dark hours, and while we're on the move, he'll have a more difficult time with reprisal, if he even knows we're out here.
I see.
We should get some sleep then, if we're going to start out there tonight.
Clough checked the water's depth on his pole and nodded at Gunn, who tossed their anchor overboard. The raft continued on a moment longer, then spun partially as the anchor fixed itself in the creek bed.
You sure nothing's going to bother us on this thing?
The druids assured me the magic they ingrain in their rafts wards off most animals and water life. But we'll keep a watch all the same.
Good.
Gon went to fetch his bedroll. After walking the edge of the raft and looking into the marsh in all directions to set his bearings, Gawain moved to the raft center, where Thasgar and Ablui sat quietly around the small fire they had burning there. The raft had come with a clay hearthstone positioned in its center, fashioned just for the purpose of cooking fires, something Gawain wished he had thought of in his boyhood days when he would pilot makeshift rafts down tributaries of the Brandon River near his home. But then his small platforms wouldn't have had the room or stability this one had. Seeing Flayna sitting apart from anyone else and staring into the marsh, he went and sat beside her. The concern in her eyes gave him pause. What's worrying you, love?
Huh?
She jerked her head slightly, apparently unaware of his presence until he had spoken. She looked to her hands. Flayna?
Something Risha said to me when you were distant.
Hellfire.
He had felt it in his bones when Risha's jealousy revealed itself for a fleeting instant once she discovered his mate.
Will she ever forget?
About me? Flayna frowned with serious thought, as if debating whether or not it was wise to share this with him.
Did you tell me everything? Did you not share love with her?
I have told you everything.
Everything you should know.
She raised her eyebrows in an expression of doubting acceptance, then looked into his eyes for the first time since he had sat beside her.
Do you truly love me?
Gawain was irritated that Risha would stoop so low as to try and sabotage his marriage.
Are you truly doubtful? What did she say to you, Flayna?
Visibly struggling with conflicting emotions, Flayna looked away.
Risha looked at me with the scorn one would someone's secret mistress and said she wasn't sure whether she envied me or not. She wondered why you chose to be an enchanter, someone who loves power, by her definition, and whether or not you truly loved me, or if, in fact, you love anyone at all.
Gods! How is it a woman I knew for only a few days can be such a thorn in my side?
But she wasn't the problem any longer. It was this attempted poison of hers. Moving closer, he took Flayna's face in his hands and turned her head to look into her eyes. The words of a woman angry with herself. She doesn't see you or me, Flayna. She sees only a reflection of herself. What do you see? The sorrowful cloud in her hazel orbs tore at his heart, and he found reason to kindle hate at Risha for hurting his wife. Flayna said nothing, only searched his eyes with hers. Almost too late, Gawain realized the trap. She would see only his rage for Risha, not his love for her. He forced himself to release his negative feelings and open his heart to her. There was no reason for him to nurture anything
but affection for his wife. After what seemed an eternity of moments, the doubt in her eyes evaporated, and she pulled herself close to him.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have let her jealousies get to me like that.
She pushed herself back a little and looked at him again.
For someone whom you never loved, she certainly leaves a mark.
I was thinking the same thing. Gaewon smiled wryly, then kissed her sweetly. It's probably due to me being the last man she tried to be close with before taking her first vows. As he drew her back within his arms, he hoped he would never again have to deal with a scornful woman. His actions the next day were to bring the worst such doom upon his head. This is performed for a live audience. Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Part 1. Sound plays of the second novel were written, recorded, directed, mastered, and produced by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Copyright 2025. Character voices for episode 25 are performed by Jackie Illig, Kevin Norris, Sid Williams, Richard Hammer, Darcy Aradell, and H. the Great and Powerful. The Sextology of Novels are available through Amazon.com, on Kindle Books, can be ordered at your favorite bookseller, or can be purchased directly from the author. Merely submit a request to our email. The wonderful music for this episode of the Harkin Theater was composed and performed by the ensembles of Mocha Music, Evan McDonald, Atlas Mason, High Street Music of London, and licensed by PremiumBeat.com. Additional music provided by Humanoid 9000. Public domain music performances are licensed under Lieber Creative Commons. Sound effects and original Foley provided by freesound.org, Mixkit of Victoria, Australia, Cusp Studios, and the BBC Library. This was recorded on location in the universe.